Okay. Evening, everyone. Welcome to the first of three upcoming sharing that, actually four, that deal with the Machzor. First three are going to be on Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. So the three different parts, you know, central parts of the Musaf service. And then between Rosh and Yom Kippur, we'll look at some of the themes in the davening in Yom Kippur. I think it's nice to be able to explore a little bit of the Machzor before in Kedusha Bli Hachana, that it's hard to really be into it without having prepared a little bit, and always have to balance, especially when I'm creating a finite number of shirim, so you have to balance to what extent do we have to talk about halacha, to what extent do we have to talk about other themes and other things that might be meaningful, but I think it's worth getting into the Siddur. And so we did a little bit last year. I did a little bit about some of the more communal tefillos. Last year I talked a little bit about Unazan Tokif, and I talked about Hanani, but this year I want to talk about some of the really core parts of the davening, and the goal is just to really bring some insight into the davening to help us understand better what's going on. I would say that especially those who will be davening alone this year should spend more time understanding what's in the Machzor, whether it's now or even on the Yamim Noraim itself, with the time, the extra time that that you're not in Shul. So you have the time now to look through the Machzor in a deeper way than we normally do when we're going through pretty quickly, even though it feels like it's long. There's a lot that's there, so relatively speaking, it goes quickly. So especially if we're davening alone, to create that meaning by understanding a little bit better what's going on. So we'll look at a little bit of the structure, the themes, and I find that sometimes when you learn the structure of what's going on, so you take a big block of text, you say a lot of words and a lot of pages in the Machzor. When you break it down and understand it a little better, we help ourselves understand what's going on a little better. So normally, on a Shabbos in Yom Tov, we say seven brachos in the Amidah. I'm not going to call it Shmona Esrei because there's not 18 blessings or even 19 blessings, which is what we have during the week. But on Shabbos in Yom Tov, we have seven. And we add three on Rosh Hashanah. And this is brought in the Mishnah. The Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah says, Seder brachos, the order of the brachos, Omer avos gvuros kedushas Hashem. So that's the same as normal. We talk about the patriarchs, and then gvuros Hashem's powers, including reviving the dead and healing the sick. Atiras Sirim, kedushas Hayom refers to kedusha. Mikol malchios imahem, and you include malchios and kedushas Hashem according to this opinion. Ve'ino toke, and you don't blow shofar there. There's an assumption here that we blow shofar during the Amidah. So then we have Kedushas Hayom, meaning where we talk about the actual day that we're marking. So on Shabbos, that's the bracha that deals with Shabbos. On Yom Tov, that's a bracha where we talk about the general theme of the holidays plus the specific holiday that it's discussing. Vitokeah, and then you blow shofar there. And we have Zichronos, Vitokeah, and Shofros, Vitokeah. And we then we say, you know, Ritzei and Modim and Birkas Kohanim, Diva Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So this is what Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says. Amarle Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, Im eino tokei l'malchios, lama hu maskir. What's the point of mentioning Malchios in Kedusha if we don't blow shofar for there? So therefore, he suggests, Elo Omer avos gvuros kedushas Hashem, as normal. V'kol malchios im kedushas hayom. So Malchios comes in the fourth bracha that deals with the sanctity of the day, the major themes of the day. Vitokeia, and then you blow shofar there. Zichronos, Vitokeia, Shofros, Vitokeia. So you have these extra brachos and you blow shofar there. Ve'omer avodah vadav birkas kohanim. And then you continue on as normal. Sorry. So we have this. So the one of the central debates in this Mishnah is, where does Malchios fit in? Is it part of Kedusha, or is it part of the bracha that deals with the theme for the day? So So first of all, why does Malchios need to fit in? Why can't it be? It sounds like we should really have 10 brachos because we have six that we normally have. Kedusha Sayom is possibly its own brachos. So that's seven. So that's what a normal Shabbos Yantif would be. And then you have 8, 9, 10 Malchios Yechonos Shofar that we add in, but that's not really how it works because the Gemara says, and this is in Maseches Brachos, Hane Teisha de Rosh Hashanah Kneged Mi. So these 9 brachos, what do they correspond to? So apparently they're 9 brachos. I'm a Rabbi Yitzchak, Demin Kartignin, Kineget Tisha Askaro She'amra Chana Bit Filasa. We say 9 brachos in the Musaf Amidah of Rosh Hashanah that correspond with 9 mentions of Hashem's name and the Tefillah of Chana. Hashem paid attention to and fulfilled the request and allowed Sarah, Rachel, and Chana to conceive. It was on Rosh Hashanah that this took place. And as we know, Chana is the model of tefillah, of one person just being able to have a conversation with Ribbono Shalom, of pouring out her heart, of having private supplication. So if we look, for those of you who are on the screen, if you look at the second chapter of Shmuel Aleph, which is the end of the Haftarah for the first day of Rosh Hashanah, so we have, in fact, 9 mentions of Hashem's name, okay, in the bold. So there are 9 times mentioned Hashem's name. A bracha has to, by definition, include Hashem's name. It has to include Baruch Ata Hashem. So just like Chana mentioned Hashem's name 9 times, so do we have 9 brachos. So therefore, we have 9 blessings in the Musaf Amidah and Rosh Hashanah. So whether the chicken lay the egg or the egg lay the chicken, whether and we had these 10, but we had to reduce it to 9, or whether they figured out that there was 9, so they had to come up with the different brachos that were going to be, there are 9 brachos in Musaf Amidah on Rosh Hashanah. So why did Chazal choose to institute these particular brachos? So, and we'll talk about what they first of all actually are. So Amar Rabba, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Imru Lefanai Rosh Hashanah Malchios Zichronos V'Shofros. What are we supposed to say? We're supposed to say Malchios. So to clarify, Malchios from the word Melech deals with Hashem's sovereignty, Hashem being king. Zichronos from the word Zecher, Zikaron, remembrance. V'Shofros comes from our shofar. So we have to say these 3 things. The Rebbe says that this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. Why do we say Malchios? Kidei she'tam lichuni aleichem, so that you accept me as your king. Zichronos, we mention remembrances. Kidei she'evel lefanai zichron neichem l'tova, that your past actions and your ancestors' deeds, all of that will be remembered before me in a positive manner. Uvama, and how do we do that? Bashofar. We use a shofar for that. So therefore, we have to discuss. It's like on Pesach. This letter just came to you right now. Rabban Gamliel says that on Pesach, in order to fulfill your obligation of Sipur Yitzia Mitzrayim or your Pesach Seder, you have to mention the Pesach Lemaror, the Pesach Lematzah and the Maror. So too on Rosh Hashanah, part of what it means to have done Rosh Hashanah is to have mentioned Hashem is Melech, to have mentioned Hashem's Zichronos, and to both blow the shofar and to mention the shofar. And the significance of the shofar here is that the shofar is a way that we bring up the positive memories that Hashem has of our people. So it's directly on that, and it seems to be distributive here, that shofar goes on both the Zichronos and the Malchios, that we use the shofar both to bring up the positive remembrances and also to coronate Hashem, to make Hashem our king. So the shofar is the means for these. So that's how we have these 3 special brachos. Okay, so basic structure they might be familiar with for Musaf is that is that we have our seven general brachos. We're supposed to add Machil Zichronos and Shofros. The Machil gets added into the fourth bracha. And then Zichronos and Shofros are added on, so we have a total of nine. Now, none of the Gemaras that we mentioned here say that this specifically happens in Masaf. But that's become common practice. That's how we assume it to be. In fact, in the Mishnah also, right, doesn't say Seder Brachos B'Masav. It just says the order of the Brachos. So we're used to having a nine. But in fact, there was a minority opinion in the Rishonim, that of the Baal Maor. And I think this is very fascinating. He says, "Any American Mishor Shahalacha." If we look at the root of the halacha, the basic foundation of the halacha, in Rosh Hashanah Sher Brachos, Elatesha Pain, the Olam, that we don't say seven blessings during the Midrash Hashanah, we always say nine. Bein Ba'arvis, Bein B'Shachris, Bein B'Musaf, Bein B'Mincha. Doesn't matter what time of day it is, doesn't matter what tefillah it is, we say nine. That's the opinion of the Baal HaMa'or, who lived in, I want to say, 12th century Provence. I know the Provence part, but I think it's 12th century, if not 13th. So he says that in theory, that's really what it should be. If he was making the decision himself, that's what he would say. And yeah, there's something to that. But he says, "El Hashem Min Hakubia Dinu Mavoseinu." Mavos Mavoseinu. We have a very long-standing custom. She'emis Parlin Teisha El Musafin. We only dive in nine during Masaf. Shart Tfilos be spalling Sheva. And the rest of Tfilos we dive in seven blessings. Uminhag Avos Torah Hiv Ein Lashanos. And this is a custom of our ancestors. That's Torah, and we don't change. So that's yet another lesson, the importance of Minhag, that even if logically the halacha doesn't, you would think that the halacha should be otherwise, sometimes we just defer to what our longstanding traditions are. So practically we only add significantly a Musaf, but these themes are obviously important for all of Rosh Hashanah. And in fact, the bracha of Malchios remains as part of all of davening. Right? There are certain parts of Malchios that we don't do during the other parts of davening, during the other times we daven, but the same basic core structure of the bracha remains the same. So why is Malchios the one that stays? And the simple reason for that is that Rav Chaim Brisk says that it demonstrates the central theme of the holiday, that Rosh Hashanah fundamentally is about coronating Hashem. Shofar is something we do. You know, it's one act that we're doing during Rosh Hashanah, and positive Zichronos is also something that is partially important. But the main theme, the whole reason for the existence of Rosh Hashanah, is fundamentally about the fact that Hashem created the world, and we accept upon ourselves that Hashem is the King. And that is the core message of Rosh Hashanah. So Malchios is a theme that it gets expanded upon in Musaf, but really, throughout all the davening, Malchios is important, and that's also something about what we should be thinking about really throughout the whole Yantif, that we're thinking about our relationship with Hashem and the importance of accepting Hashem's sovereignty and authority. This is expressed very beautifully in a story of Rav Soloveitchik. You may have seen it somewhere. Rabbi Sachs brings it in his Machzor. I've seen it in a few places. So the Rav writes, he said this in Drasha once, our teacher was a Chabad Chassid, said to us, "Do you know what Rosh Hashanah is?" So the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, would call the night of Rosh Hashanah Karanatsia Nacht, Coronation Night. So then this Malamed asks, "Do you know whom will we be coronating? Who are making king?" The teacher asked the children. So yes, I got this from a website today. I did some of it in third person. So the young Rav Joseph B. Soloveitchik before he was the Rav or Rabbi. So he said Nicholas, or coronating Nicholas, right, who was the Tsar at the time. So the Mlamed of Chasavich responded, Nicholas, he was coronated years ago. Why do we need to coronate him again? Besides him, he isn't the real king. Tonight, my dear children, we coronate Hashem. And this is where it gets really beautiful. And do you know who places the crown? And the teacher continued. Yankel the tailor, Beryl the shoemaker, Zalman the water carrier, Yassel the painter, David the butcher. The Rav said, over the years I've given many sermons and written many discourses on the concept of Rosh Hashanah, but nothing ever made me feel the true depth of power of the day as the words of my childhood teacher. Every year when I recite the Rosh Hashanah prayers, the words, rule over the whole world in your glory, Mloch al kol ha'olam b'chodecha, remember my teacher in Chaslavich. So this is a really a beautiful story, and I think one thing that's beautiful about it, something that's beautiful about Judaism is that one thing that, and this is something that I think Rabbi Sachs talks about, he actually just came out with a new book today, side note, but one thing that Judaism really did is that, you know, in a world for centuries and millennia where people's value was based on your economic status, your social status, are you the king, are you a peasant, are you a serf? So that's how people's statuses that said who you were and what your worth was. And in Judaism, especially as expressed in this particular story, so it's not it's not beneath Hashem's dignity for every Pashut Yid to coronate him, but we're all sort of equal in that respect. I think that's an important idea that Rosh Hashanah isn't just about, you know, making sure that somebody else does a coronation, but each one of us has a role in that. And that's what Rosh Hashanah is about. That's why we have Malchios that pervades even beyond Tfilas Musaf. Rabbi Sachs, in the introduction of his Machzor, notes that the different brachos and Musaf, the Malchios, Yichnas, and Shofros, correspond different time stages. Zichronos is about the past, Shofros is about the future, and Malchios is about the present. Malchios is the present. But if you think about that, actually, it's kind of strange, because you would think that Zichronos should come first, because that's the past. Malchios should come second, it's the present. Shofros is the future. So I might suggest, why does Malchios come first? Why does the present come first before the past and the future? Because the current moment's a moment that matters the most. And what we do in the here and now is what charts the future. We can't go back and change the past. So it's important to recall the past, to think about the past, to contemplate the past, to be introspective. But the moment that truly matters is the present. It's in the present that we coronate Hashem. And it's our present. It's our present deeds. Before I was sharing Rambam Hilchos Tshuva with the people in the Minyan about the role of shofar, where Rambam talks about how shofar is the alarm clock, and therefore we always have to see ourselves as, you know, as being half half innocent, half guilty. That we, you know, half of our acts, at least in quality, are mitzvos, and half are averos. And the idea of the shofar is to remind us in every present moment we have the opportunity to tip the scales. And that's what Malchus is really about, is that accepting Hashem upon ourselves in the present moment, every single moment. So that's what really matters. That's how we bridge the future. Soloveitchik notes that there are a few themes in Malchus. At first, God is the origin of existence, that God created the world, and thereby everything that exists originates from God. In some of the different parts of the Tefillah, there are allusions to even, you know, the plants you know, forget, you know, forget animals that, you know, that move, have some sort of behavior, but even, you know, plants and trees that are stationary in their life, but they, you know, they don't, there's no behavior there. So even they accept that Hashem created everything at the time of creation. So the Rebbe writes, in other words, whatever exists has its roots in God, who sustains finite beings by permitting them to partake of his infinite being. God created the world. He sustains the world, and the world exists because God is kind, good, and merciful, and permits the world to share with him. So because Hashem created the world, Hashem owns it. So that is one idea of Hashem being king, that everything originates with him. Therefore, he's in charge, and it's really he's sharing the world with us and giving us the opportunity to experience it. Okay, so let's look at the actual structure of Malchios, and we'll see over the next couple of weeks that this applies to Zichronos and Shofros as well. But the basic structure, there's a chart in one book that I have. So basically, there in each section of Musaf, there's an introduction, some sort of introductory paragraph, and then there's psukim from Torah, Ksuvim, and Nevi'im in that order. Okay, actually goes out of the order we would have expected, but it's Torah, Ksuvim, and Nevi'im. And then there's a prayer for the future that finishes with a Bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem. So that's a basic structure. Introduction, psukim, prayer for the future. So if we look at Malchios, so it starts with Aleinu. Aleinu l'shabech l'adonah kol. So now, of course, we say this every day, but originally it was a tefillah that had extra kedusha because not the tefillah, that, if you think about it, polar opposites. During the year when we say Aleinu, I noticed this, especially when I'd be davening alone, that you get to Aleinu, you just have this instinct that, you know, you're starting to wrap things up and you're, you know, walking around and you have paying attention. That's how we say Aleinu during most of the year. In contrast, in Musaf, you know, there's a very, you know, slow tune that the Chazan says, and at some point, as we'll discuss, people, you know, we get on our knees and we bow down. It's a totally different climate. So this is the introduction to Malchios, and perhaps the climax of this paragraph is Anachnu Karim Mishtachim Modim. We bend and we bow and we give thanks to Baruch Malchei Malchim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the King of Kings, the Holy One, blessed be He. So why do we bow here? I think this is, in some ways, this is part of the coronation. This is the part, you know, before we're saying that, you know, we have the obligation to praise Hashem that He didn't make us like other nations that dive into gods that don't really exist. But this is the part where we say, but you, or we rather, we accept you, God. We accept you as one God. Right? This is Kabbalah. In some ways, it's a Kabbalah's Om Malchus Shemayim. This is when we're accepting Hashem's sovereignty. Aktekach, that we bend and bow before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is sort of a coronation. So this is, I think, some of the climax in the introduction. Okay, so I'm not going to go through the whole Aleinu. Familiar with it. One place where again it comes up that Hashem is king. Emes Malkeinu Apis Lato. Hashem is, how do they translate it here? He is our God. There is nothing. Our king is true. This is where it is. Our king is true. All else is insignificant. Okay. So this idea originates from Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Vashem Elkim Emeshu. Well, the Lord is truly God. Emeshu Elkim Chaim Melech Olam. He's a living God, everlasting King, etc. So Rashi says, Vashem Elkim Emes. Why is he described as Emes? Kihu Elkim Chaim, because he's a living King, Melech Olam, and he's a King forever. Lekach Yachol Lamis Tvarav. can ascertain the truth of his being. Aval basar adam, omer lasos, umeis, otasha kocho, orim minchasa, vim biyado l'kayim. So when Hashem says something, we know it's going to be true because Hashem's always going to be around. Hashem's always going to be the king. But when somebody who is a king of flesh and blood, or a president of flesh and blood, whatever it is, when they're in charge, so they might break their promise, they might have pressures, they might be overthrown, they might be assassinated, whatever it is, that happens, and it happens in many kingdoms. So Hashem is Emes because when Hashem says it's true, that's an important part of accepting Hashem. That we know when we accept Hashem, we understand that we're dealing with something that's true, that's meaningful, that's enduring, and it's not something that's subject to the whims of an individual or something that could change a lot overnight. Okay, so then we have the al kenakavlecha. It says vikablu chulam es ol machusecha. So here again, mentioning of a kingdom, I didn't even realize how many times it mentions Hashem's being king or kingdom in a land until you look at it carefully. Actually, before you have lasakin olam machusakai, we daven that Hashem's world be fixed, His kingdom would be fixed. That everyone accept upon themselves the yoke of your kingdom. It's the Rabbi Huda ben Yakar says that means to listen to all Hashem's commands. This is a tefillah of that not just Jews but the world will accept Hashem's sovereignty, not necessarily to keep Torah mitzvahs the way we do, but that there's some sort of understanding that there's one God who's in charge, and that we're supposed to listen to. We avoid anarchy that way. That there's no relative morality, but if everyone's at least following Sheva Metzos B'nei Noach, that it creates a better world. So that today we have before that everybody will accept upon the yoke of Hashem's kingdom. V'timloch aleihem meira l'olam ba'ed, that you will reign over them soon and forever. Ki amachut shelcha hi, because the kingdom is yours. Okay, so this is the introduction. And then we have 10 psukim. In every section in Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros, there are 10 verses. So one is, Hashem yimolchu olam ba'ed, Hashem should rule over us forever. And Farshim note that it doesn't say Elkim Yimloch, but Hashem Yimloch. And when it's Yud Kei Vav Kei, when it's that name of Hashem, so it usually connotes mercy. So, and that's a very fitting thing that, in the very moment that we're accepting Hashem as a ruler, that we try to accept Hashem as a ruler, but he should judge us mercifully. That's something that we're certainly looking for, looking for on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, the next pasuk, I'm going to go through these fairly quickly. I don't want to belabor the points, but it says, "V'nemar lo yibid av en b'Yakov v'lo ra'a mal b'Yisrael." He beheld no iniquity in Yaakov, nor did he see any wrongdoing in Israel. Hashem elokav yimo truas malach bo, and the love of the Hashem is with him, and the love of the king is among them. So that word trua would seem to denote the shofar. Here we have a mention of a king, of course, that's important. There was a king in Yeshurun, with the gathering of the heads of people, the tribes of Israel were united. I think this is interesting here. So here Yeshurun refers to Bnei Israel, that among Israel there's a king. But I was thinking that there's a big contrast between this versus Ish HaYashar Be'inav Yasa, that we see in Sefer Shoftim, that that when Bnei Israel didn't have a king, when they didn't have a physical king, and when they hadn't accepted Hashem as their king, what was it? There was anarchy. Everybody did whatever they want. But when we are Yeshurun, when we are upright, Yeshurun means to be straight, to be upright. When we are upright, when we do the right thing, when we are unified, and accepting Hashem. So we have that kingship. So Hashem's sovereignty comes at its best when we are upright, when we are unified in this, not when it's Ish Hayishar Be'enav Yaseh. So we also have another pasuk, Ki Hashem Amlucha Mashal B'Goyim. Then pasuk Hashem Malach Yehus Lavesh, the Shir Shul Yom. We often say it as the Shir Shul Yom for Friday. We say it at Kabbalah Shabbos. We say Shabbos morning as well. Hashem Malach Yehus Lavesh. Hashem has begun his reign. He clothed himself in majesty. The word Geus has the word Gaava in it, word pride. So only Hashem can have pride because he's eternal, right? Other kings come, they go, but Hashem is always there. So while other kings die, whether through a downfall or natural cause, they have nothing to be prideful of because eventually it's going to come to an end. And the impact of their actions also might be limited. A new king can come and totally reverse everything. But when it comes to Hashem, Hashem can have pride as being the eternal king. There's also something significant about the fact that we pass by Hashem one by one, kibnei maron, right, like sheep, single file line. And at that point, there's no room for pride. We human beings have no reason to have pride because Hashem's going to look at each one of us closely. So if we think we can sort of, you know, get away with whatever it is that we are, Hashem looks at each of us in the closest, in the most honest possible fashion. So, in the face of God, when you have like this one-on-one meeting with God, you know, when we're just, you know, one of many people, so we think, oh, we're just lost in the crowd and he's not paying attention to you. When Hashem looks at us that closely, so we know we're being scrutinized and maybe we're not as prideful as we would be otherwise. The following psukim include Su'usharim Rashechem V'nasu Piskam. So this is the psalm that we say on Sunday mornings and when we put away the Torah on Mondays and Thursdays and Shabbos and Mincha. Lift up your heads, gates, and be uplifted, entrance ways to eternity, so that the King of Glory may enter. Melcha Kavod. So again, I think there's this theme of pride. The pride belongs to Hashem. That honor belongs to Hashem. That Kavod belongs to God. It doesn't necessarily belong to us. Okay, so these were the psukim that come from Psalms, from Ksuvim. All the psukim that get brought here are from Ksuvim, come from Psalms. And then we have psukim from Nevi'im. Kol Hashem Melech Yisrael Golo. This is what the King of Israel said. Ani Rishon v'ani Acharon. I am first. I am last. Baladai Ein Elokim. There's no other king besides me. So there's an idea, Yev Sharlishtem Lachim Shishtam Shubikat Erecha, that two kings can't share the same crown. So there's something logical about the fact that there's one God. There's one God who's in charge of everything. If we start to, God forbid, we start to bifurcate, we start to think that, so then we, you know, you doubt the power. In Greek mythology, like the gods like fight with each other. Right? They're jealous of each other, they fight with each other. But this is a strong, king. This is a king who really, and on the one hand, he rules alone. You think that sometimes you're sharing it is better, but in the case of Ribono Shel Olam, it only augments his capability of running the world appropriately, and the fact that we have to listen to him. You can't play mommy daddy with the other gods. You have to follow. You have one king. You're accountable to him. Okay, and then we have Ali Moshim Baratzi Ulmish Bodh Hari Sabatash Lashem Lukhan, the kingdom will be Hashem. Benamar, Vahaya Hashem Macha Kol Haaretz. This is how we normally end Aleinu. Vayama Huyi Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. The Radak says that when we say that Hashem will be a king and everyone will recognize him, everyone will acknowledge that Hashem is in charge. We talk a lot about fate on Rosh Hashanah and the importance of Hashem deciding what our future is going to be. So I think this idea that Hashem that acknowledging that Hashem is in charge, Vayashem Lamelech, acknowledging that Hashem is in charge, has important implications for understanding fate. That's important for our conduct and for our sanity to recognize who's in charge. That on the one hand, some things are beyond our control. Something that really resonates this year, that we've learned that Hashem is really the Melech and everything is in his hands. But it's also important for, you know, in terms of the Yom HaDin context, it's important for our conduct that, that you know, if we think that we're in charge, so we manipulate and we think we have unlimited power, we can do whatever we want. But if we realize that we answer to Hashem, that Hashem is really the one who's in charge, so then it becomes our job to serve him and not just to do whatever I want. And we have the final pasuk. So it's interesting that there's two things that are interesting here. Number one, normally this last pasuk, 10th pasuk, comes later on, you know, within the actual bracha for, let's say, shofros and zichronos, but it's brought on earlier here because then the rest of this is what we normally say every other Shmona Esrei. So the authors of the Machzor wanted to make sure that that we mention this 10th pasuk that's unique to the idea of Malchios before we get into the part that we say all of davening. It's interesting that Shema is brought here as a pasuk. It doesn't mention anything about being a king, but it's about Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim. We say Shema, the whole idea is that we're accepting Hashem as our sovereign God. And that's really the pasuk for most of us. It really encapsulates it. And we want to accept Hashem's authority, we think, of Shema. So that's what's going on here. Okay, so we have the 10 psukim, which I sort of quickly explained, but got to understand different aspects of Hashem being king, that that he's merciful, that he's in charge, that covenant belongs to him, that he alone rules the world, and why that's important. So then we get into this bracha, this prayer for the future. Now that we've mentioned the importance of Hashem's kingdom, so now we have a tefillah for the future. We don't just leave it off, but we think about what's happening next, what's going to make it better. Okay, so it says, Melocha kol am kulo bichodecha, reign over the entire world with your glory. There should be no other king besides you. Nobody should see their power as absolutely supreme. That's certainly an important idea. There are four mentions of the Shorish Melech here. Meloch, and we have Melech Malchuso, and then Melech HaKol HaAretz. Right, so those are four mentions of the idea of Hashem being king. So the Gemara says that there were, I guess, three individuals, Hashem being the fourth, who ruled over the world, Acham, Nebuchadnezzar, and Achashverosh. But Hashem is the king over all of them. Nebuchadnezzar, in fact, is explicitly referred to as Melech, Nebuchadnezzar is referred to as Malchim, Lachim. Nebuchadnezzar is the one who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the first one. So he's referred to as Malchim, Lachim. So when we refer to God as Melech, Malchim, Hamlachim, so that's like saying that Hashem totally outstrips Nebuchadnezzar. Hashem reigns over all of them. So that's the illusion in these four different melechs. Based on this idea, Vevo Melech HaKavod, Hashem has the glory. And Rabbi Huda ben Yakar has this idea, when we talk about Hashem reigning over the whole world in his glory, right, it's Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvakom, Lo Chol Ha'aretz Kivodo, that the whole world is filled with Hashem's glory. So that's our tefillah, that Hashem's glory shall be throughout the world. What's the idea of this tefillah? Actually, before I'll get back to that in a second. But then we have this this line here: "Yomar kol asher neshamav v'po." Any being that has a breath through his nose will say, "Hashem Elokei Yisrael Melech," the God of the Jewish people is a king. Machuto b'kol mashal, and his kingship rules over all. So this gets to this idea that Hashem's supposed to, that, you know, on the one hand we're davening that Hashem should be the king of the future, but we also talked about how Hashem's really that Malchus is about the present, that Hashem should be the king right now. So why is that? So The Rav writes, apparently God is not king of the world yet. God should be the king. However, he is not yet recognized. Somehow, mankind, humanity, have not yet elected God as their king. This is the problem we deal with in Rosh Hashanah. This problem touches upon the very destiny of man. So Rav sees it as something to grapple with, something that we're asking for the future, because it should be happening now, but it's not yet, and that's the existential, that's the need for Rosh Hashanah, so to speak. That's what we're trying to get at. But I think part of this is also is that we recognize that for the Jewish people, for every single Jew, our job in Rosh Hashanah is, in fact, to coronate Hashem, to crown Hashem in the present. That's our job right now. Hashem should be the king right now, and we're supposed to accept upon that, ourselves every day. Shema Yisrael, twice a day, we're supposed to accept that upon ourselves. When it comes to other nations, so that's the tefillah of the future. And okay, so just to wrap up, so the end, we have the end of the, then we get into sort of the, again, more the Kedushas Hayom, the sanctity of the day, Kadshei Mitzvotecha, that we say every Shabbos, and Yom Tov, and the Bracha ends, Malchus ends, Baruchat Hashem Melech al Kol Ha'aretz, Hashem is the king of the land. So this is based on a pasuk in Tehillim, Ki Melech Kol Ha'aretz, for God is king all over there. So we say this before our Tekiah Shofar. So Mamun says, Ki Melech Kol Ha'aretz Elokim Shegam Mitzan Hanhagato Pshuta Shadei Shem Elokim Hu Ata Melech Kol Ha'aretz. The Kulam of Dimoto. So just as a very simple matter of fact, from what Hashem does, Hashem is presently a king and everybody serves him. Balkan Zamro Maskil, therefore we sing to Hashem. So this bracha ends with this idea that that Hashem right now is a king all over the world. We're davening that everybody will accept that, but fundamentally that's true. And at least the whole Jewish people is supposed to be serving him. Question, I two questions I'll end this off with. But one, why do we blow shofar in conjunction with Malchios? We're both around Musaf, but what's the connection with Malchios? So we said that, that how do we crown Hashem with the shofar? But the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva, Uri Sheni Mishinatchem, we're supposed to wake up. Shofar is supposed to be our alarm clock. They're supposed to wake up and realize what's going on. Wake up and realize and recognize that Hashem is the king. The part of it is it's the instrument of coronation that we do use trumpets to coronate Hashem, to make Hashem our king, to announce that Hashem is a king. But in some ways, it's also a wake up call for ourselves. Shofar is a wake up call for ourselves to realize that Hashem is already here and Hashem is already the king. And we sort of renew this every year. We remind this of ourselves every year. But that's something that we are supposed to remember and recognize in everything that we do, not just in Rosh Hashanah, but throughout our lives, we're supposed to remember that Hashem's in charge and that we're here to be his servants and to do his mitzvah. So the thing for us to think about is who's in charge of this world. And we might look around, we might look up to other people as leaders, we might look up to other human beings, as our king, as our political leaders, but in fact, Hashem is really the one who's in charge. And even if we think about beyond from the political realm and the more literal ideas of there being like a king or person in charge, are there other forces in our lives that rule over us? Are we in control of how we lead our lives, or are there other forces in charge? And that's something again for us, that alarm clock, or Yesheni Mishenatkam, is supposed to wake up from our slumber and realize that we're supposed to make sure that it's Hashem who's in control, and what Hashem's will is, it's what's in control. And with that, we'll continue next week with Zichronos.